You know, as a, you know, a GRC pro, if you're going to be advising on risk, you don't need to be the expert on said technology, right? You don't need to be the expert of the code repositories that exist within your organization. You don't have to be the expert in routing and switching. However, you should have enough knowledge to have an educated conversation, right? Because you're talking to the expert. You're not the expert. They're the expert. They know how the platform works. They know how the application works. And I believe if you want to do right and maintain the integrity of the profession, and put your best foot forward and protect the organization, then you should have a basic understanding and knowledge of the technology stack within your organization.
Welcome back to another episode of Textual Talk. We got our lovely co-host today,
Cyber Shorty.
And we got a guest all the way from ATL in the building today.
What's up, folks? This is Abdi.
But first and foremost, if you're listening to us on streaming platforms, please follow us and leave us a review. Help us out in the podcast analytics. And if you're watching on YouTube right now, all you gotta do is hit the like button. And if you keep on watching, subscribe. But for those of y'all that don't know, Abdi has been on the platform before. It was like 2 or 3 years ago. We did a live about GRC.
Yeah.
And he said he wanted to run it back, so I said, why not? Mm. Then it's one of my better live streams, actually.
Yeah, man. I was a nervous wreck. I remember because you were like, hey, Abdi, do you want to do this live on LinkedIn or do you want to do it just recorded and then edited? I said, you know what? Nah, screw it. Let's do it live.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun.
But for the people who don't know who you are, just give a brief intro or spiel about yourself.
Yeah. So, you know, my name is Abdi Muhammad, you know, from San Diego, California. I'm based in Atlanta. I'm a GRC practitioner. I'm a cloud advisor these days, helping, you know, organizations, teams, engineers, programs, you know, use cloud effectively in terms of security wise, in terms of cost wise. You know, and really just making sure that the technology that we use, you know, we maximize and get that, you know, return on investment. So these days, you know, I do a lot of compliance remediation, you know, vulnerability remediation, advising, consulting about 80% of my job. And I'd probably say, you know, 20%, I spend more time on, you know, engineering work. Let's say we got a web app that's down. You know, we, you know, check the logs, see what's going on. So, you know, it's been fun. You know, I've had different roles. I started off as a GRC analyst, you know, and yeah, you know, I remember all I was doing was pushing paper, pushing documentation that first year. And then I got into security auditing, and I, you know, did a brief stint doing classified program. And, you know, and when I say classified, that's pretty common in GovTech. There's different types of, you know, work that you can do. I did some classified work for a season, and then got into the cloud. And then now, you know, I help advise, you know, the whole business area on how to use their cloud effectively, because, you know, people want to use cloud for whatever initiative that they got going on. The thing is, you know, when it comes to adopting technology, as you know, right, as a business, it has to be attached to an outcome. There has to be a lot of intention in that. If there's no intention, you know, and you're just blindly adopting technology, as you know, like, you get technical debt, you get security risks, you get cost risk, right? And if you're not careful with your technology adoption, you know, it could be catastrophic in the long run. So my job is to make sure, you know, I give people the education, the training, the advising necessary to be successful, you know, with their technology implementation, specifically cloud.
Perfect, bro. Now, because I like she's itching to ask you a question.
Ooh. I do have a question.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
How would you go about explaining what cloud governance is to maybe one of your family members?
Yeah.
Or a close friend?
Yeah, I would say, you know, if I were to explain like cloud governance to somebody, or family or friend, I would say this. You have technology and you need technology to operate in your business, right? However, you know, to do it effectively, you need to have oversight. You need to have some parameters, some rules, some policies, right? Imagine living in a country where there is no oversight. There's no laws, there's no policies, there's no procedures, you know. If that doesn't exist, what do we call that? We call that the Wild Wild West. So I would say, like, you know, to my family member, imagine, you know, you have this piece of technology and you wanted to make sure that, you know, other folks who use it know how to use it properly, but in a way that also makes sure that it's not causing trouble. You're not breaking anything. You're making sure that, hey, we're using it in a calm, in a not destructive fashion. Right. I think when I think of governance, I think of, you know, oversight. I think rules. I think policies. I think procedures. I think direction, you know, and cloud governance is really focused on, you know, what's the direction with our cloud strategy?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I was just thinking about when you said governance, you know, and today's time, all we think about is technical stuff.
Yeah.
But it can go for anything.
Yeah.
Like, everything got to be zoned when it comes to buildings and stuff, got to pass inspection.
Right.
I thought about something that's not simple, but think about all the checks cars have to go through for the
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Think about the cars that probably didn't used to have a, what is it, an odometer?
Yeah.
Speedometer.
Yeah.
Knowing that you know how fast you're going.
Yeah.
Or, hey, the people that didn't used to have taillights, people just having wrecks all the time because you can't perceive distance.
That's crazy. That was a time where you wouldn't have taillights. That's crazy.
Yeah, like.
Wow, just thinking about it. Oh, my God.
You know what I'm saying? I don't know how the governance went for horseback riding. I
mean, yeah. Hey.
So, but nah, you know what's funny? I forgot that you was from the West Coast.
Yeah, I'm from the West Coast, man. You know, San Diego, California, you know, born and raised.
How you feel about Joey Badass pretty much putting all the West Coast rappers in a headlock?
Well, you know, shout out to Joey. Shout out to Joey, man. That's him. Like,
now, I listened to some of the dishes when I was out of town and when I could. So it was pretty cool. But funny that you said pushing papers. While I was on the way here, I actually was talking to Lee. And he was just getting mad.
Lee Clayton?
Yeah.
That's a good brother, man. That's my man.
You know, he drove down here because he had nothing to do. So yeah. He drove down here.
Wow.
He drove?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But he was just talking about how he's working with all these paper pushers in the government sector. He's like, yeah. They don't know nothing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He was like, a lot of the people who's on the interview now are going to be paper pushers and they're not getting hired because they don't know any technical stuff.
Right, right.
This goes back into what you want to talk about that time when I made the poll about GRC being technical or non-technical.
Yeah.
And, you know, and your thoughts about it, especially coming from, like you said, you just started off as being like a paper pusher.
Yeah, yeah.
How you feel about it? What's your take on it?
Yeah, so this is interesting, right? So there's two parts about this. The first, let's define what technical is, right? So sometimes when we hear technical, we think operating systems, we think, you know, programming, we think network devices, routers and switches, but, you know, is configuring macros Excel, is that not technical? Like you know, who defines what technical is? Is technical exclusive to operating systems? Or are we, you know, are mathematicians not technical? Like, what are scientists not technical?
Yeah.
You know, what's the definition of technical? Is it just using technology? You know what I mean? So I think the definition of technical is, you know, when we define technical as working with operating systems, you know, working with network devices, router switches, or, you know, working with, you know, programming, if we just have the definition of technical to just that, we're not acknowledging or respecting, you know, the other areas in our space that are technical that isn't working with those things that I just mentioned before. That's part one. Part two, I would say, you know, as a GRC practitioner, you know, you want to have oversight and make sure the right policies and procedures are in place. That's the G in governance, right? You want to make sure you have the policies in place, you know, and procedures in place to protect the organization and manage risk to an acceptable level. It's hard to advise on risk, right? Because I'm talking from my experience. I have worked with engineers, and I've had a scenario, right, where I didn't know anything about a container technology. And I pressed this engineer, I said, hey, what are y'all doing for container security? And he replied to me, said, hey, you know, container security is pretty broad. What do you mean by that? Are you talking about securing the host operating system? Are you talking about the image repository? Are you talking about the runtime engine? And my answer, I froze. I didn't have an answer for him. I went back to my desk after that meeting, and I told him I'll get back with him. And I sat down. This is like, you know, this is way about 4 years ago. And I remember thinking, like, that was wrong. I shouldn't have pressed him about something I didn't do any homework on, which goes back to advising on risk, you know, as a, you know, a GRC pro. If you're going to be advising on risk, you don't need to be the expert on said technology, right? You don't need to be an expert of the code repositories that exist within your organization. You don't have to be the expert in routing and switching. However, you should have enough knowledge to have an educated conversation, right? Because you're talking to the expert. You're not the expert. They're the expert. They know how the platform works. They know how the application works. And I believe if you want to do right and maintain the integrity of the profession and put your best foot forward and protect the organization, then you should have a basic understanding and knowledge of the technology stack within your organization. So it's really hard to advise on risk if you don't have any knowledge of the tech stack and stuff. If you don't know what a port or protocol is, the difference between, you know, SSH and Telnet, right? And these are basic, like, very, like, you know, basic stuff, but, like, it's the basics that trip most companies up, right? And I would say, like, if we don't, as a GRC pro, if you don't have those sound fundamentals, especially just within your organization, because every business, their tech stacks are different. Mm-hmm. You know, they might be using Kubernetes. This company might be using OpenShift, right? But you want to make sure you understand the technical fundamentals as well as the technology stack within your organization to advise on risk. Because if you don't understand the tech stack, you know, you're not going to earn the respect of the practitioners that you're working with, the engineers that you're working with. And if our game as a GRC practitioner or security advisor, it is really a game of influence. You cannot influence if there's not a healthy level of acknowledgement that you've done your homework. You know, so, you know, again, this is from my experience. I walked out that meeting feeling like an idiot. And, you know, it's not fair as a GRC practitioner if you don't understand the tech stack and you're advising a software engineers on or systems engineers or legal, you're trying to advise them on how to do something, but you haven't done your part of your homework, you know, and it boils down to, like, you want to put your business, whatever, wherever you're working or your business in general, in a successful spot. You do that by making sure that, you know, you advise on risk from an educated perspective. And yeah, that's my take on it. You know, do you have to be technical? Yes, you do have to be technical. Do you need to be the expert in everything? You don't need to be the expert in everything, but you have to have a fundamental knowledge, you know, the basics, the fundamental knowledge of the tech stack that you're working with to make an educated advice, because the engineers are coming to you. They're saying, hey, we found this vulnerability. Hey, you know, we have this compliance certification coming up. How do we go mm-hmm. about earning that, right? So, yeah, that's my take on it.
No, that's a good take, because when you were talking about being technical, I feel like it's anything that you can go in depth on subject-wise.
That's a good
like
point.
It's some people who probably know zero about security,
yeah,
zero about networking, but these people have been building PCs for years.
Oh, for sure.
They can tell you everything, specs, sure, schematics, this fan is better than this fan because of this, it's overclocked to this. So they're technical for that. So, I mean, we know people that make livings. They have these channels where they talk about anime. Very technical, high-level stuff, detail. Yeah. And they are doing all type of stuff where they're trying to compare and contrast the speed of light and how fast it's moving and the sound barrier.
You are right.
So it's just I feel like it's just stuff you can go in depth in. And I think the issue that we come into is, and I get it, people can get into GRC with no experience because, and I'll put the caveat, is that a lot of these people have some transferable skills from other areas.
Oh, for sure.
That could work.
Yeah.
But I think the thing is, I think some people do feel slighted a little bit because it's like, hey, you know, you're telling people that we know that don't have any experience with this stuff to come in, and all they're going to do is keep on asking me questions all the time, and I can't even do my work.
That's it.
And that happens a lot.
That's it. And, you know, and it's not that people aren't going to help you, right? But it's one of those things where, like, if you come in on a job, right, and you're constantly poking at the engineers, you know, for them, they're like, well, we have a deadline. We have this application. We got to push out the production soon. You know, there needs to be a value exchange. I think asking questions is great when you start a new job. I think you should ask questions, especially those first 90 days. But, you know, past that, you know, if you're constantly asking questions, you're poking them, how does this work, you know, past that for a long period of time, you know, it's like, why do we hire you, you know?
Right. But I also feel like a lot of things that's out there for people to get their knowledge up, it's not put forth in a way that they can actually absorb. It's information overload.
We have that. That is an issue.
I don't think
across all disciplines, yeah, that's an issue.
Yeah, I don't think it's, nothing is out there to say, hey, this course is made for people who are about to be a GRC analyst in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
common things that you would ask or things that you should know at a foundational level or telling you to study these, like, that doesn't exist. So it's already hard enough when you get into a company that I was talking to my manager about this, like how a lot of people are surprised you go to different organizations as much money and stuff that they make, infrastructure wise, networking wise, security wise, trash.
Yeah.
No documentation, nothing. Here, yeah. Give you a laptop and figure it out.
Yeah.
So you're doing that with people with no experience. How do you think they're going to respond? They're going to ask a lot of questions because you didn't have anything set forth, training materials to help them kind of say, okay, for the first 4 weeks, this is all you're going to do.
You're actually right. That from my experience, that has also been consistent when I started in GRC. There was no like, hey, you're the GRC guy for the company. Here's what you need to do. You need to work with legal for a few weeks, get to understand their legal processes and what they're looking at. And then you got to go to the to the systems engineers, go to their architecture reviews. Like, there was never a sequencing mm-hmm. train. It's kind of like, hey, we have this compliance certification coming up. Figure it out. We got to make sure we're compliant, otherwise we're going to lose this multi-million-dollar deal. You know, and that's a good point, because it probably does exist, but it's probably in the margins. Like teams that actually say, hey, you're the GRC on the team. Mm-hmm. Here's a clear cut description of what your job is as a risk advisor, as the, you know, sometimes as a GRC pro, you'll probably play the internal audit as well. But yeah, that's a good point. I have not seen like a clear cut, hey, these 4 weeks are doing this, we gotta train you up on this. These 4 weeks are gonna train you up on this. These 4 weeks, you know, that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah.
The only place I ever got training in was help desk.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they had training, they monitored your calls for a couple of weeks. You got the drive with the, you know, advanced analysts and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You had actual KBs that you can go to that directly told you what you could do. Other than that, every other thing is kind of like,
that's a good point.
Figure it out. Ask somebody.
But speaking of help desk, you know, I know a lot of people tend to bag on help desk, but like, I didn't do help desk, but some days I'm like, man, I tell myself I wish I did help desk, because the skills learned as in help desk or system administration, that's the foundation for any engineering architect job that you could think of.
Yeah, I say as long as it's a good one.
Yeah.
Sometimes I come across some BS help desk stuff that people do. I'm like, this ain't it.
Yeah,
then you got the ones that's like where you actually doing work, but they call you help desk, so they're going to pay you.
There's some security folks that was doing serious security work and also networking work, like cable management, setting up router and switching, setting up mm-hmm. the network architecture. They has, they have help desk on their titles. Yeah, that's a good point.
That's why I say, man, let's change this stuff so you get your money.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, good point.
I have questions. So how do you get buy-in when teams push back on governance without sounding like the cloud police?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So for me, you know, I'm in charge of making sure that every dollar that goes into our cloud spend, there's an ROI on that, right? I'm also responsible for making sure that there's not too many security compliance like violations within accounts. So to get in buy-in doesn't happen when friction happens. Getting buy-in happens way before that. Getting buy-in, you know, as soon as you start your role, you should figure out who are the parties that you'll be working with. And you should start already doing rapid risk assessments where you're getting to know these people. Hey, I just put some time in your calendar. I'm working on this compliance side of the house here. I just want to build rapport with you, get to know you, and really just understand the initiative that you got going on. Now, when you're advising on risk, right, you know, they know that, hey, I know what your program is doing. I know what your application with this initiative is about. I'm in support of that, right? Now, when they know that and that relationship is built, now, you know, you can have an educated conversation, and you could push back and, you know, play that little game of tug of war. You know, it doesn't always have to be a adversarial. It's adversarial when you guys got no relationship. The first time I'm talking to y'all is when there's a compliance violation, right? You want to make sure that, well, you're not always gonna know everybody within the company, but having a relationship with those key players across different teams, across different initiatives, you know, I think that, from my experience, that's helped out a lot. Because, for example, I'll get a scenario where, you know, there's like a file stored just unencrypted, you know, and this specific, you know, application, this team, they have multiple file storages not encrypted. And because I've already built a relationship with them on other events, like let's just say they had their cloud bill that was too high, and they had EC2s, like virtual machines running 24/7, where really, you know, they didn't need those virtual machines to run 24/7. And we've addressed that before. But like now I'm meeting them again, I'm like, oh, it's Abdi, you know, he's got our back. He, you know, I think the people that you're working with, they need to know that you're here to support them, you're here to advise them, and you want to champion them. Because sometimes another thing I've noticed with some folks too is that you just send a bunch of documentation to them. I get it. People should do their homework. People should be reading. But people, including myself, are lazy. We don't want to read. We don't want to read. Especially if it's like a 20-page documentation, right? So having like a 15-minute call saying, hey, here's how you do this. Like, you don't want to use your, for example, here's part of cloud governance, right? Cloud governance, you know, you want to make sure that you're addressing shadow IT. Shadow IT is a big deal. You know, from a security lens, it's a big deal. From a cost lens, like business lens, it's a big deal. From an operational lens, it's a big deal. So addressing, like let's say someone doesn't know how to decommission their AWS account, right? The last person using it, they got fired, they got laid off, or, you know, the team's not even using it anymore, right? And we got a bunch of servers in that account just running. That's some security risk right there. We don't even know who owns it anymore. What's going on, right? And if I need to address that with them, instead of sending them a bunch of documentation on how to do it, say, hey, let's hop on a 15-minute call. Let's decommission this account together. That, in my opinion, is how you do effective security, effective GRC.
But that takes a skill set, like you said, the technical skill set.
This is true.
To teach them or walk them through how to decommission the server properly, because you have the skill set.
Yeah.
Versus you sending them a documentation because you don't know how to do it, but you know what the directions say to point them to.
That is true. That is completely different. Yeah, we just send them documentation. I don't know what the documentation said, but apparently this works. Yeah, that's definitely different than hopping on a call and walking them through and showing them the dependencies. Like, all right, first you want to delete this, then delete this. That's a good point. Mic drop again.
See, and that's why I like a tool like Loom, because you can just make a walkthrough and they can just watch it or show you when they watched it. They can ask questions at different parts of the video. But, of course, a lot of companies, they don't really want to use the third-party stuff all the time because they just want to know, well, who has the data, because Loom uses a lot of AI and stuff. Like, put it like this. Let's say you wanted – remember earlier how I was talking about the issue with no documentation?
Yeah.
With Loom
– which is a big issue across the whole – every company. Like, no matter what company you work at, any business you work with, yeah, documentation is a challenge.
So with Loom, you could record the decommission process.
Yeah.
And it has functionality inside the actual tool that'll say, hey, turn this into an SOP. So now,
wait, just off that recording?
Yeah.
And it's a clean SOP?
Yeah.
Formatted sections?
It does everything. Yo, it transcribes calls, helps people with action items from the call.
Interesting.
It can make blog posts out of stuff. It's a tool I've been using for a while, and I always like go somewhere like, this could have been a loan. I mean, I ain't have to listen to this right now. You can speed the speed up, you know, 1.5, 2x.
Yeah.
So that's where I think, like, I like the productivity side of AI.
Yeah.
And speaking of, like, the shadow IT stuff, how have y'all been, I guess, trying to combat that, you know, with the different things that people are doing? Y'all are pretty much more of a on-site hybrid environment, right?
Yeah, we're hybrid, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and truth be told, most companies that have been around for a long time, they're more than likely hybrid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that kind of helps y'all circumvent the fake North Korean IT workers.
That's a thing. That is a thing. Yeah. Yeah. I'd say we're addressing shadow IT. Number one, I mean, I work for a really, really big company. Addressing shadow IT, number one, first, it boils down. There's a lot of angles you have to attack to address shadow IT. There's a lot of different angles you have to attack. Number one, you have to attack culture.
First.
Like that. Like, we have to address the culture, the philosophy, how we are doing business. You know, what are our values as a company? Is our values as a company wasting resources? Is that a value? If it's not, okay. If our value and culture of leadership drives the point. I'm talking about the directors, VPs, all the way to the C-suite. You know, they have to, from the top down, drive a culture where they say, hey, we want to be intentional with our resources. When that happens, then, you know, then you have stronger, you know, onboarding, offboarding procedures, right? When that happens, you have, you know, you have automations in place. You have, you know, automatic emails in place. Like, hey, we haven't seen y'all log into this account in 90 days. Yeah. What's up? Right?
We're about to disable it.
We're about to disable it, you know? And you know, I think that all of that culture, you know, and there's going to be less pushback if the culture of the leadership at the top level, they've already made it very clear, like, hey, as a company, we're going to be intentional with our IT resources. We're not going to waste money. We're not going to, you know, buy licenses that we don't need, buy new security tools that we don't need, that we already had in-house tools that already address that, right? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, when it comes to addressing shadow IT, before we get to the policies, procedures, the automations, like you said, it's going to boil down to culture, and that culture is defined by our leadership.
Right. So when I brought that up, the reason why I say that is because now I had said this on LinkedIn, but the people can use these programs where they can look and sound like anybody.
Is that Elon?
Yeah.
Elon Musk? Yeah.
That's not actually him. That's somebody.
But that look like him.
Yeah.
What is it, a deep fake?
Yep.
Yeah, we're cooked.
Remind me of that Hong Kong situation.
Yeah, but this one works because you could pick.
He has a flashlight. He's trying to show that, hey, like,
it's me.
It's me, yeah. Yeah, it's getting to a point where, like, I'm becoming, like starting to have a lot of distrust. I already had a little bit of distrust on the internet, but now it's to the point where I'm like, I don't even believe the headline. No, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't believe the headline. I don't believe the video. Like I wonder what, you know how, like, when you have a, you know how, like, there's digital signatures on emails or on, like, you know, yeah, on emails, you know, when you're sending across the network, right? Like, there's digital signatures that exist to maintain the integrity, make sure that the data, the email was not tampered with.
Right.
I guess, how's that going to work with AI? Will there be an integrity process to make sure that, hey, this is actually not a deep fake? Here's a signature, here's a stamp, that, you know what I mean? Like, that approves that. I wonder if that's something that's in the works, because it's going to get to the point where, like, anything on the internet, you're not going to trust it. You know?
I think we will. Aliases have been around for a long time.
Yeah.
I worked at a company where we had an alias, so if we had to call help desk, we had to give them an alias, which is not your name, your email, or anything that's associated with knowing that, you know, if my initials are PQ, it's not associated with that.
Yeah.
Just some random generated digits.
So, like, SSO.
Essentially. And so they would be like, can I get your alias? And boom, you give the alias. Who else is going to know it? Mm-hmm. No one else is going to know it but you. So I think we might be moving to something like that to verify who you are, because how would they know your alias? It's almost like your auth app. It's a, how would they know unless you gave it away or gave it to someone? To do that as a check, for example, because, you know, there's a lot of help desk related account takeovers.
Mm-hmm.
As a second factor of validation, who am I speaking with? Okay, great. Can you give me your alias? Boom. How can I help you?
Mm-hmm.
So cutting down a lot of the riff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I said something like
that. And that's something that's like assigned to you through like HR.
Right.
So if you were to leave the company and come back, they're going to get that alias back to you because it was already assigned to you.
Speaking of that, that's something that...
Instead of, like, you know, deleting your account.
Right,
it just
right.
goes inactive or they deactivate it.
Oh.
Yeah.
And we actually been talking about something like that actually just on a bigger use case. We're talking about all these breaches and stuff, your socials. And we're like, why are we using that important information at all these companies versus... like she said, using an alias that's tied to a social on the back end, you know, good old database, primary child.
Yeah.
And then you have to just worry about the security of whatever it is that's giving you those random digits or wherever they're housed to map back to that.
So now
person.
People just got to make sure the Oracle database is locked down tight.
Yeah, it's encrypted, rest and all that.
So I don't know, it's really interesting. I think, like, maybe even people will be able to pick up, like, technology that looks for different frequencies and talking when it comes to an actual human versus an AI voice, and maybe look for disparities there. There'll probably be some ways around it.
I'll be honest, like, I might get in trouble for this, but I've gotten tired of our industry with the sales and marketing and the hype of AI. And
you can tell that someone doesn't know what they're talking about when they're using a bunch of buzzwords, right? You know, the true, as we all know, someone who really understands what they're talking about, they explain it in a way that a child can understand. And, you know, I grow tired of just on the internet, and this is just a rant, we can clip this up, you know, with these AI buzzwords. So that kind of, like, a lot of AI this, AI that, but, you know, saying AI is going to do this, it's going to do that, it's going to do this, all these predictions. It's predictions coming from people who've never done a research paper, who've never done, you know, any you've never been in the arena.
They don't even know what the definition of AI is.
Yeah.
Starting there.
You don't even know how operating systems work, and you're making such a bold prediction, right? You know, and I'm not talking about Mark Zuckerberg and, you know, homeboy from NVIDIA. I'm not talking about those guys. Those guys, they started in engineering. I'm talking about
the regular person.
This ad is being brought to you by ChatDoc. Are you a student drowning in research papers, a researcher sifting through endless data, or a professional in finance, law, or IT dealing with mountains of documents? Imagine having a trustworthy AI assistant that can make your life easier. Introducing ChatDoc, the intelligent tool designed to help you navigate and understand your documents like never before. ChatDoc is perfect for efficiency-driven students, academic researchers, financial, legal, and IT professionals. Here's what ChatDoc offers. Free with generous limits. Chat with 10 PDFs up to 3,000 pages long and cross-search 30 files. No credit card needed. Word-level citation. Highlight any word or phrase in the answer to view the exact source in the original document. Verification has never been easier. Multi-doc search. Ask questions spanning all your files and let ChatDoc connect hidden insights. Supported formats, PDF, scanned documents, EPUB, Markdown, and more. ChatDoc's powerful technology includes Hybrid RAG System, a contextual retrieval system that improves question answering precision, source tracing. Every word in the answer links directly to the original source, eliminating AI hallucinations. Advanced searching and parsing, self-developed PDF analysis that recognizes tables, formulas, headers, and footers in multiple languages. Cross-document query, upload files into one folder and ask questions across all of them for more accurate answers. No size limit. Handle unlimited page PDFs and oversized files without restriction. Geographic repositories. Sync with chat paper for daily articles with summaries, free reading, and downloads. Collaboration and export. Share Ask and Progress sessions via link and export in Markdown, HTML, or PNG. Use the link in the description to visit ChatDoc today and revolutionize how you work with documents.
I'm talking about these people with the blue check marks on Twitter and
the people who say it's going to take over the jobs.
You know people get paid for their posts on X. So
that's a good point.
There's a lot of rage bait you see on there.
Yeah. Then that's a good point. And you know that kind of pushed me away from trying to even pick up a book on AI. I'll be honest. But lately I've been reading a little bit more, getting into it, and I'm really curious. You know, how companies are going to address security and cost risks with both of those, because AI is not cheap. Those servers, those GPUs are not; those things are not cheap. And you know, this is my bold prediction. Not bold, but it's just a prediction. I do believe that, you know, as companies aggressively adopt this and try to do layoffs, there's going to be a big technical debt. A lot of technical debt.
Oh yeah.
I think they'll have to rehire some people.
Klarna. Klarna thought they was gonna move to just using all these AI agents and stuff like that. Just for the CEO to kind of recant, like, yeah, we gotta hire people again.
Yeah. Because technical debt will. Technical debt is the cost of doing business, right? You're gonna get into some technical debt. However, you know, too much technical debt, that will slow you down. That will slow you down for sure. And
yeah, because you're going to have to constantly try to update the AI to kind of perform whatever, when you can just hire humans. Like, nobody wants to talk to a robot, but I need to talk about some customer service.
I never enjoyed that, those automated customer service
calls. I'm beeping
calls.
Zero so many times.
Agent, please.
Beep. Agent.
Like, seriously. Yeah. I think that eventually everybody will need to have a foundational knowledge and understanding of AI because it's not going anywhere.
For sure.
But it will be interesting to see what that looks like. And I do mean just a basic understanding. What is AI? What are large language models? What are some of the basic terms? Now we're moving over to agents. So, what does that look like? And I think that like the people you were saying, like, there is going to be a shift in the mindset and the understanding, because it's going to become so consumable that you can just download an app and do whatever you need to do, you know? So I do think it starts with people understanding a little bit more of the fundamentals as it pertains to AI.
For sure, for sure. Definitely understanding, like, kind of like how we went from on-prem to cloud, understanding that, hey, on-prem, all these networking devices, these servers, we use that for compute, networking, and storage, you know. And cloud, we're still using compute, networking, and storage type of thing. And with AI, yeah, I think I definitely agree. I think understanding how it works, ultimately, how the systems behind it works, I think definitely that's going to be critical. We're going to have to know, especially as engineers, practitioners, architects, advisors. We're going to have to know, because, you know, if we don't, you know, our companies are gonna have a field day, field years, you know.
Yeah.
Every time you keep on saying we gotta know, I keep on thinking about that TikTok. Nobody's gonna know.
Nobody's gonna know. Nobody's gonna doomed.
That's what I keep thinking about.
Man, that's funny.
Speaking of cloud governance, I mean, you know, we're already moving into the age of AI governance.
Yeah, for sure. For
sure. See none but companies hiring for AI governance.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen a lot of job roles with that. I'm seeing the big four, you know, tap into that, you know, AI auditing, AI governance. I think we're going to need it. I think, you know, we're going to need oversight.
We need you.
I see the bat signal. Let's do it, you know? Like, you know, but yeah, I think it's going to be important. You know, it's also like, you know, some as security practitioners, right? When we don't understand how something works, what do? We just say, no, you can't use it. And I think companies across the board, you saying no to AI is not going to work. Mm-hmm. People are going to use ChatGPT if you ban it. They're going to use it.
No, yet.
You know? Unless you blacklist it, but I mean, they can just use their phone.
Thank you. They're just going to use it at work where you don't care. They can take a picture of what's on the screen.
So I think it's important in your training. Your annual training, you start to tell your employees about AI risk.
Bingo.
Just like you're doing with, this is a good password, this is what it looks like, this is how you should be, you know, getting on the VPN. Just how to use technology appropriately, but like also it's inappropriate to share business data.
Correct.
With unsecured solutions like ChatGPT, because you know, this isn't a, we don't have a relationship with ChatGPT, so we can't govern what's happening with our data once you do whatever you're doing on your mobile device with it, because we blocked it at work, you know, vice versa. So I think we need to shift some of that into the training, and also doing these trainings more effectively, more often, not just once a year or part of orientation or onboarding, more than quarterly.
Yeah.
Because things are advancing day by day.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
What do we decide that's a malicious prompt? Do your users know what that would be? So if they are trying to run any in your environment, they know that they could potentially be identified, or there could be an alert raised. So just some of the basics.
I think it's, granted, like in tools like DLP, you can see if somebody's doing something on a certain site they're not supposed to be on. Like, we'll see somebody upload something to iCloud or whatever. I'm like, oh, we can't access that. You know, I'm sending you to the insider threat team just to talk to you, because, like, what are you doing? But, like I said, the real corporate is the fact that now with all these good phones and stuff we have, you can't control what they're doing if they're remote or something, taking a picture, copying it.
Unless that phone is a corporate phone, you know, and if obviously the company has a good mobile device management.
If.
But even that, though, I mean, somebody, they don't take nothing for somebody to have a phone and want to exfiltrate some data without having to exfiltrate.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, we love technology. It's like, I like this Apple. I like this Android.
Yeah.
But, hey, you kind of overcooking my grits right here, because now I don't really have nothing to circumvent somebody from doing something with their own phone outside of my finding out later and suing them.
I mean, you know how people say, like, humans are the biggest risk. Well, I mean, they kind of, humans are the risk to everything. What are the problem? What is gonna be the problem? But I think like you mentioned earlier, I think
training has to become better.
The training has to be embedded. The culture, you know, that and not just free, not just mandatory training, but like you wanted to say, like, you know, hey, here's how you can use AI to be effective at your job. I think Shopify pretty much said, like, if you're not using AI, don't talk to me about hiring anybody else. You know,
they're gonna be like Klarna though, so it don't really matter.
Oh, where they get the yeah. No, it's interesting times we're living in, because it's bizarre, because you see these layoffs, but you also see some of these new roles being created. You know, it's I haven't looked too deep into the numbers, but I will say that I think, in my opinion, the pendulum is swinging too far one way, and I think correction will be happening over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean,
not like a one to one, like for every 100 people you may have laid off, you'll probably hire 10 of them back, type of thing.
I think it's like,
that's just what I think.
I think tech is just so popular right now because layoffs and stuff like this have been happening on this magnitude for a while, but it's just now it's just all
it's
in your
focus,
face.
It's focused, it's targeted, it's on
it is
social
in my
media.
LinkedIn feed. Yeah. You know, the
because,
feed, the
but
feed.
But that's because
yeah,
you're
yeah.
in the field.
Yeah, yeah.
For folks that are probably outside of the field, like, we don't really talk about healthcare layoffs.
No.
Unless you're in the healthcare industry.
No.
But do
we don't talk
even
about
get laid
or
off
manufacturing
healthcare?
Or any other sector, unless you're in that sector and you know kind of what's yeah. going yeah. on. So it could potentially seem like it's worse. I mean, we know it's higher, but it could seem like it's worse because we're in the field.
Yeah, that's a good point. Manufacturing has been getting gutted for decades.
Yeah, yeah. Why did they be back yeah. With the tariffs? Who yeah. knows?
Shout out to the president.
But not. So, top five things somebody would need to know today in order to start a career working in GRC.
Top five.
Shout
out to top five. Top five. You know, he's Somali.
Yep.
Yeah, he's one of my peoples. So top five skill sets. Okay. Number one, you have to have effective communication. But obviously that's any domain skill. Expertise.
We'll make it easier for you. We'll focus on, like, you know how we're focusing on, like, being technical. Like, what would be some technical things or
yeah.
stuff they would need to know about
for
if they
sure.
want to start a job?
Networking fundamentals. Again, you don't have to be a CCIE. Just basic networking fundamentals. What is a router? What is a switch? You know, what is a packet? What is a, you know, like, you know, why do we need to encrypt the traffic on a network? Why are companies concerned about what's going across the network? Understanding that. So just basic, you know, TCP, IP, you know, basic ports or protocols and how they work. Right, because regardless of what engineering or architect role that you might be playing, you know, understanding what port 80 is, you're gonna need to know what port 80 is. Mm-hmm. You know, port 443. What is a SSL/TLS certificate? Why is that important? Right. So basic networking operating networking fundamentals, and then I'd bleed into a basic operating system fundamentals, like what is Active Directory. Again, you don't need to be the expert in Active Directory. You don't
just
need
to understand it.
You got to understand why do companies have Active Directory, you know, right? Why? What is a Linux operating system? You know, what is open source? What is, you know, what are the basic commands you can do on Linux to go through the command line, create, look at logs, see the activity happening within the machine, or, you know, troubleshoot an application. Like, those are basic things, right? Because as a GRC, if you're auditing a Linux machine, you have to go in the Linux machine, SSH into it, understand what SSH is. Mm-hmm. Chances are your company might have like a captive portal or something to authenticate yourself again. Understand what that is, right? So basic networking, basic operating system, preferably Linux. And then from there, I would say, I would definitely say you need to learn how to influence people. And, you know, GRC is really boils down to a game of influence. And if you're upsetting people based off of your tone of voice, your communication style, you need to do your part to address that. Because again, you know, you're not the builder. I'm sorry, GRC folks. You're not the builder. The security folks, you're not the builder. We're not the builder. We're not building the platform. We're not building the application. The people who are building the product, they are ultimately what's generating revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So our jobs are to support that. Or we're in a supporting role. Very critical, very important. But, you know, you need to know how to influence those individuals. And you can only influence someone, you know, to the level of your ability to communicate effectively. And when I say communication, right, there's different domains of communication. Right here, this is interpersonal communication. You know, we're hanging out and having a time, right? And then there's nonverbal communication in the meeting. You know, maybe you're on a Zoom call, you know, making sure that you're staring into the screen, making eye contact, you know, during a face-to-face meeting, right? Yeah, so I definitely say, you know, communication. That's number three. Number four, you have to understand that I think a skill that you'll need is adapting. I mean, across all tech domains, but adapting as a GRC pro is going to be very important.
Right.
Because, I mean, y'all work in security. You guys are seeing all these new tools every day development teams are using. You know, things are moving at a faster pace, you know, and I think you as a GRC pro, you have to understand the tools of the trade in the industry, but more importantly, understand the tools of the trade that your company is using. Mm-hmm. So if your company is using, you know, is using Oracle database, I think it'd be beneficial for you to learn about Oracle databases. You know, if your company is using, you know, Nginx as their web server, you know, I think you should go learn about Nginx, what it is and why is it important. And you as a professional, okay, what are the risks of using this web server? What needs to be in place to use this web server in an effective, secure way? So that's number four, learn the tech stack within your organization. And number five, I would say, I think a skill that you need to have is you need to have patience, because people will get offended by calling their baby ugly. You know, you will say, hey, there's this risk. You got to remember that you're calling their application their baby ugly, you know?
I never heard it put like that.
Yeah, like, think about it. You're a developer. You put your heart, blood, and soul into this platform, and you have this GRC person telling you how to do your job. You're going to be like,
right.
You know? So you have to say, hey, listen, I'm not here to tell you how to do your job, but I do believe if we are compliant with these minimal security requirements, we'll have a better finished product. And I know you want to have a better finished product, because that means your leaders are going to be happy, our customers are going to be happy, we're all going to be happy, right? So I think understanding that is going to be very important, that you got to have a high level of patience, because, you know, some people get annoyed when they get a bunch of emails with security vulnerabilities. You know?
You're preaching to the choir.
You know, they get annoyed when they get a bunch of non-compliance emails. They get annoyed when they get a bunch of, hey, your cloud bill is out the rails. What's going on, right? You know, they get annoyed by all these emails. And, you know, for them, they're focused on, hey, they have this deadline their director told them that they need to meet for this particular sprint, right? And, you know, so you, when you come into that, right, chances are they didn't. I'm ashamed to say this, but there's a high level of chance, right? In these sprints, there's no hours or budget to put for security.
Yeah.
Right? There's no hours budgeted in, you know, no money budgeted into story points. Is that what we call it these days, story points? No story points. Story points for you know, sustainment, security, adjusting security, or cost gaps, right? So you're coming in, you're interrupting their workflow. So you have to understand as a GRC pro, you have to be patient and understand whether you're working with a systems engineer, a software engineer, a web developer, whatever team that you're working with, legal, you know, understand that, you know, to a degree you are interrupting their respective workflow. And, you know, having patience and empathy is critical in your role. Because if you don't, you know, you won't last that long. You won't last that long. You'll be upset. You'll be crying in the car every day, you know, wondering why people won't listen to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because really that last part that you displays really emotional intelligence.
Emotional intelligence.
That's the best way to have it. But I'm surprised you didn't say learn one of the clouds.
I was gonna say cloud, but I would say, like, you know, that goes into the operating system and networking, because ultimately cloud is an abstraction of on-prem, right? So I would say, yeah, definitely cloud. That is critical. Learn cloud. But, you know, I would say before you learn cloud, just understanding those networking fundamentals and operating system fundamentals, that will give you a strong advantage point when you get into start learning cloud. Because now you learned about
how networks work at a basic level. You learned about how operating system works. Now that we're using cloud, it's still...
Yeah, same thing, just jumbled together.
Just jumbled together, yeah.
And it's just different with all the different services they got. Like,
right,
that's
right.
Probably like the thing, like, you're like, oh, we can do this, we can do this. Oh, yeah. We got some of these compliance features. Oh, we have... like for AWS, I know that's why I work with most, like, you know, guard duty or what's SMS and CloudShare, all those different things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, VPC flows, they can kind of show you these different things that you need, of course, based on compliance standards or whatever. You got to be subject to compliant too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's right here. We got all these.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
So, that's one, like, that's the thing too, is like when you get more experience, you start seeing like how your job like kind of ties in to other areas.
Oh,
when you
sure.
first start, you just so siloed in and think it's just this, but then you take about 15 steps back and then you start seeing everybody's like connected to make sure just the company's making money.
That's a good point. I think, yeah, as you grow in your career, especially if you want to make it to that like principal engineer or that director VP level,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have to have this thing we call systems thinking. Understanding how all the different pieces of the puzzle work together. And, you know, you have to understand how your directorate, how that plays in the role in the bigger picture. Because now when you understand how your role, how your team, how your program, how everything that you're doing plays in the bigger picture, now you can make a better informed decision,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think especially like if you're like an architect or you work in incident response, right? You've been building or GRC, you've been building relationships across the organization with different teams, understanding how they work, right? Like, let's just say legal, for example, accounting, finance. Now you understand how the whole business works. And like, okay, now I know how my role supports all these other functions. And that gives you a competitive edge, in my opinion.
No, for sure.
What surprised you most about the work you do today, maybe compared to what you expected it to be like breaking in?
When I first started versus now. Surprised most. There were quite a few surprises. I have two, but the other one I will not say on television. I will share with y'all after this episode. On the Patreon. but one that surprised me... and I don't think all corporate, all teams are this way. We're all human, right? So we got bad apples, you have good apples. But, you know, what surprised me is how sometimes corporate can be pretty ruthless.
Mm.
You know, sometimes the people that you work with, unfortunately, can be pretty ruthless, as in, like, and I don't think it's they're intentionally being that way. Sometimes it's, like, pure, like, they're not even aware that what they're doing is a little foul.
Tell me about it.
You know? So, like, I had a situation where, like, it'll be the small things where I've already responded to an email, but because this individual does not check their emails all the way through, they're also sending a response, but they didn't know that their response just threw me under the bus. Right? Because let's say I make a mistake in the email.
I'm going to say they did know it threw you under the bus.
You tell what?
I'm gonna say they did know.
Yeah, you called. Yeah. But yeah, like it's one of those things where, like, you know, it's common sense. Like, let's say your teammate they sent a response to a customer and it was not the best answer or it wasn't fully correct. Instead of replying and correcting your teammate with the customer on the thread, why not just message your teammate on the side? Hey Abdi, real quick, just wanna let you know that wasn't the best tool for this use case. You might want to use this instead. Let the customer know that. Boom, problem solved. And what does that do? Now I have a tighter knit relationship with my teammate. And what do we always say? Teamwork makes the dream work.
That's my motto.
You know? And for me, I've had a lot of situations like that where it'll be those little things where, like, hey, we'll have a meeting, right? And I remember when I first started, we had a meeting, right? And mind you, I just started. I'm like, my first weekend, we had a meeting, right? And no one on the team thought, you know what? Maybe let's grab Abdi. You know, even though he was invited to this meeting, let's grab him. You know, before we all had this meeting, I just joined the company. I don't even know how to use Outlook like that yet.
Ooh.
You know?
You brought up something else. It's like, back to the new hire, like, there's so much that they don't teach you in school on, like, just office etiquette, how to work.
No, dude, I've never taken a class on office etiquette. I had to learn that. Like, hey, here's how office works. If there's gossip, you probably want to stay away from it. You know, you probably don't want to talk about X, Y, Z in the office.
right? Mm-hmm. You probably want to, you know, like just basic stuff that you felt like, you know, I wish I knew this walking in. So I would say, you know, my biggest surprise is how ruthless corporate can be, and how sometimes you have to remember that you might have a strict honor code, a strict value system, but you have to remember not everyone that you work with shares that value system.
Yeah.
Nice. And well, you kind of answered that. I was going to, it's this thing I've been doing the last couple of episodes. Yeah. I stole it from Jay Valentine, I think. It's called I Ain't Saying No Names. It's where you talk about like a funny situation or something at work or something that happened, but you can't say no names.
Okay. Okay. Funny situation.
Sometimes it might even got to be work. It just got to be funny.
No. I'll share it with work. I have no. We're all family here, and the tech tool talker. You know, we're all family here. I had a situation where, you know, I work in GovTech, and a lot of veterans work in GovTech,
mm-hmm.
and there are a lot of people who work in GovTech who are also passionate about the mission of GovTech, and sometimes that passion may lead them to curse out of passion for the work. And, you know, yes, it's not professional to curse, but people do curse in the office. This is a fact. People curse in the office. Your directors, your VPs, they're human beings. I'm not saying cursing is good. I'm not encouraging cursing. But all I'm here to share that it does happen. And I had a colleague, because one day I had a crazy situation happened. I won't get into that specific situation. It was like something with a project, like with a new deadline that we got. Mm-hmm. I won't get into the details of how that happened. But what I can say is a new project, new deadline happened. And I was had a mouth of a sailor for that 5 minutes, you know, and I was upset, you know, and me and my other teammates were upset because this means we may have to work a couple weekends, you know, and I'm not against working on a weekend if it's a critical project, but this is one of those situations where we were calling it 6 months out, like, hey, we got to address this now, but now, because y'all didn't listen, we have to work on the next 3-4 weekends. And I had a teammate at the time who overheard us cursing. And this gentleman, unfortunately, he didn't just go to my manager. He went to HR. Let me say that again in case the viewers did not hear what I just said. He didn't go straight to my manager. He went to HR first. And then he told my manager. And, you know, I my teammates, mind you, they have families to feed, man.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of being a teammate and saying, hey, listen, I know you guys curse and whatnot, and I'm okay with that, but just around me, give more, I'd appreciate it if we just kept the cursing to a minimum. Can we do that? If that individual say, hey, I'd appreciate it if you kept the cursing to a minimum, I say, totally, no problem, right? Mm-hmm. But mind you, the guy just joined the team. 2 weeks in, he just joined the team. The guy that told on us, straight to HR, 2 weeks in the team. He told HR.
So Randall was trying to get a promotion.
Exactly that.
Did it work?
No. He, you know, my manager came to us. He just pretty much told us what happened. He said, my manager said, I'm gonna be honest, I don't care. However, I'm according to policy, we shouldn't be doing X, Y, Z. You know, we shouldn't be cursing. And moving forward, let's dial it back. Mm-hmm. Let's keep professional as possible. And then another incident happened where it wasn't me, but it was the two other guys on my team. The guy that told the first time, he overheard the conversation, and it wasn't at him. It was just them cursing about a situation that they were in.
Mm-hmm.
He told HR again, and he emailed the policies describing what was going on. So
he's just a butthole.
Pretty much. And, you know,
I got a follow-up there.
Yeah.
So can you talk about how important it is to be able to bounce back from situations like that and still be able to effectively work with someone in that situation? Because we encounter that all the time, not necessarily that particular situation,
sure.
But we still have to go to work. We still have to do our job.
Yeah.
We still have to buddy-buddy it, you know, it up in order to not hinder yourself and your stability and your growth.
Yeah, I think to be in that situation, resentment will not be helpful for you. You're going to be half a step slower in your job. You're going to be sending emails from a place of anger, right? You might blow up on your family at the house, you know.
Yeah.
But when they have nothing to do with it, right? So in that situation, you know, and again, you know, everybody, their religion, their value system might be different, but having a healthy spirit of forgiveness, I think it's beneficial, not just for them, but more important to you.
For yourself. Yeah. For yourself. It's really for you, not for them.
It's not for them. It's really for me. Like, I need to forgive you because I can't be my best self right now. So I think having some, in those type of situations, number one, having some forgiveness in you, forgiving the individual that committed the crime. Don't forget.
Right.
Don't forget, because if you forget, you might get caught lacking again. Yep. Right?
But fool me once.
Fool me once. Yeah, that's right. Fool me twice. You know, so I would say definitely having a spirit of forgiveness, but also in terms of bouncing back from that, you have to understand, right, sometimes people you work with can't be your friends, but oftentimes that is not the case. You are getting paid to do a job. You're getting paid to do a task. That's ultimately why you're there. And, you know, it's like, I like how the Netflix former CEO, he talks about, you know, work is not your family. Work is a sports team.
That's kind of like a red flag when it's like we're a family.
Oh, it's the biggest red flag. If they say we're a family, you might, unless it's a small knit company, startup family, like a startup company, and like everybody knew each other growing up type of thing. Like there's like a bunch of relations growing up. I get that. But yeah, if a company says we're a family, like, don't do that. That's disingenuous. Mm-hmm. That's disingenuous because you can't fire your family.
Right.
And if you do, you know, Thanksgiving is going to be awkward.
Yeah.
Facts.
You know?
Unless you got a good reason, I guess, to fire a family.
They'd have to commit something heinous, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say navigating those situations, you got to have a spirit of forgiveness, and you have to understand that the people that you're working with, they're not your family, right? So you have a job to do, they have a job to do. Have that conversation with them. Like, hey, I apologize if what I said did offend you. And, you know, moving forward, you know, I hope we can move past this. And I hope we can continue to work together and do our best work. Because that's why we're here. We got a job to do. You know, let's not be the reason why we can't do our jobs. Because now the whole team is sinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks. So, Abdi, how do the listeners and the audience, how do they keep up with you?
Yeah, for sure. I'm on LinkedIn. I use LinkedIn pretty often, so... give me a holler on LinkedIn at Abdi Muhammad. Abdi, A as in apple, B as in boy, D as in dog, I-E. Last name Muhammad, M-O-H-A-M-E-D. Look me up. I'll be sure to connect and follow back. And then I'm on Instagram as well, A Muhammad Elevate, A as in apple, and then Muhammad, M-O-H-A-M-E-D, dot Elevate, E-L-E-V-A-T-E. And yeah, feel free to keep up with me there. And big shout out to to the lovely, lovely hosts, you know, the Tech Chula Talk. You know, the first time I was here, I had a blast. The second time around was even better. And it's crazy because when we did this last time, it was virtual. Mm-hmm. And now y'all got a studio. You know, you see what happens when you work hard? You see this? When you stay focused?
Tell me to keep watching.
Keep watching. It's there's something special happening here. And, yeah, thank you both for the mm-hmm. platform, for the opportunity to share my story, and always an opportunity to learn from y'all. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Appreciate it, man. And for the ladies watching, are you single?
I am single. I am single.
They be coming to the platform, so that's why I'm like, you know what I'm saying? Hey, shoot your best shot if you wanted to be screened by me first. Send it on IG. We'll check it out.
He's on as Kevin Samuels. He's on as Kevin Samuels.
You on the Kevin Samuels.
Listen. I am single. That is what it is. I am single, and
I wish I could title the episode "I Am Single."
Yo, man, that would be crazy. Hashtag I am single. This should be in the Patreon. This should be in the Patreon for sure. Or like the exclusive.
It'd be like maybe a clip just for like TikTok or something. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But guys, thanks for tuning in to the episode of Textual Talk. As we say, until next time, let's stay textual, and we out. Peace.